Peace.
All right, we can all stand. There's your flag, hand over heart, ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Maybe have roll call.
All right, Vice President Altamirano. Can you hear us?
They're muted.
Everybody looked well.
Leslie, you're muted.
Brian's muted.
Yeah, because we have a phone right there. My computer's muted. We can circle back to her.
Yeah. No, it's good. Let's get the audio visual right.
Director Altamirano, can you hear us?
John, can you hear us? Can we just make sure that we're transmitting properly? John, can you hear us?
It looks like he's muted.
You're muted, but are you able to hear us? We can say it's not us.
Hey, John, can you wave at us?
Hear me?
Yeah.
How's that? Get
Oh,
my
we can.
wife's
That's
name, but
better.
how's that?
Okay.
I'm unmuted.
Okay. Okay, great.
All right,
Okay,
Vice
we're good
President
now.
Alston. Okay, we're doing roll call. Vice President
Okay.
Altamirano.
Here. Here.
President Leija.
Here.
Director Skrbalas.
Here.
Director Treba.
Here.
Director Murphy.
Here.
Okay, moving on to item four, public comments. Have we received any requests for public comment?
No, not on any non-agenda matters.
Okay, with that, we will adjourn this portion of the meeting to move to closed session. Okay, we can have that. That's portable matches. And we will reopen our open session at 4:36. And with that, we'll move to item number six of the consent calendar. Do we have a motion?
I'll move to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
It was the second?
Okay.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Your extensions? Motion carries 5-0. Okay. Item number seven, correspondence and related information.
Yeah, I included an article in here from the Press Enterprise. Thought it was interesting. It relates to the trash service. Coincidentally, we have an item on that's related to that. But looks taller, not Birtech, but Republic. They are in response to SB 1383. They are spending $90 million to build a hundred well on a 140-acre site to build and composting and mulch processing facility. So. This is in direct result to SB 1383, that Short-Term Climate Reduction Act. There we go. To divert food scraps from the landfill to, I guess, reduce methane gas, at least. So I just thought that was interesting. So obviously, that's one of the services that we provide to all residents here at Rubidoux. So Vertex, our waste hauler, they're in charge of our organics, and I don't know where it goes. After we give it to them necessarily, but this is something that Republic had to do to start accepting organic. So I thought that was interesting.
Anything else? Moving on to the 8A operations report.
Miguel. Thank you, Brian. So the operations report for the month of May. We had 432 acre feet produced, mostly by well 8 and well 1A, both of the Thompson plant. First week of May, we did import water from JCSD. We got a well back on after that, so we shut off that line. The potable water and wastewater comparison, in the month of May, we had 7.5 million gallons average produced, and 1.74 million gallons a day went on to the Riverside Wastewater Treatment Plant. The reservoir report, we'd like to keep about 5 million gallons available at all times, in our reservoirs, which is about 80%. Chemical deliveries for the month of May. Sodium bisulfite, we had three deliveries in the month of May. Morton certified white crystal salt, one load to the Smith plant. And sodium hypochlorite, chlorine, we had two loads in the month of May for almost 4,000 gallons. Any questions?
The primary wells that were being used, that was well number 1A and well number 18, is that right?
For the month of May, yes.
Okay.
18 and 1A.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item B, emergency and incident report.
All right, Chief Boyd.
Didn't the last meeting, right?
The April one got deferred, so this is the May one.
Shoot.
Okay, here you go.
Shoot, how we
did
did
both? Did we do both?
How we did both.
Okay, well, why don't we do it again?
Well, do it again. My apologies. Oh, yeah, I did do this one last time. Okay, well, before we do it, May we had 313 of our incidents. That was an increase of 25 calls over the previous year. We're still meeting our response times that we're ready to respond to. Yep, we did the fire marshal's office inspections like we discussed last meeting. The leave abatements have been completed and those notices have been issued out. And I know that Director Murphy wanted to get a report back on how many were going to be, I think it was going back, right? If they didn't do it
Right,
correctly.
so you mailed out
Yep.
110. So you're gonna reinspect 30 days later. That's like coming
Yep.
up at the end of this month. So yonder around July 4th or so, you're gonna be sending out letters to the people that
Didn't.
didn't abate. I'm interested in what that number is. So the total number of notices to abate was 110. I'm interested to know how many get a follow-up letter. And then, yeah, in the future, we're going to be paying somebody to mow, and I'll look at that invoice to find out how many people got mowed.
Good.
How many people had their properties mowed?
That's all I have.
Okay. That takes us to item 8C.
I don't have any updates, but yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, I have quite a few. So to get started with, on the dais, you guys probably saw there is this Anita B. Smith Water Treatment Facility pre and post pumping energy cost document that we've provided to you. So Director Murphy had requested a couple meetings ago that we calculate the anticipated annual savings from the work that was done at Anita B. Smith to rehabilitate our wells 4 and 6. And to remove our booster pumps. So what we did is, based on the difference in horsepower, we calculated that our annual savings, will be about $71,000. So after the rehab, annual savings is that amount. Now, this is assuming that all of our pumps are running at full speed, but with VFDs, we should see an even greater savings. So that's what this document is here on your guys' dais. Yeah. So what we did is we took the energy cost from 2025 every single month, and then we calculated what the savings would be, assuming the same hours of use. Does anyone have any questions on this before I go to the next?
So during the calendar year of 2025,
Yes.
you got the usage from the bill and the rate from the bill.
Correct.
Okay.
And then we
And then you're projecting in. So what you're saying is if this other equipment had been used
Yes.
instead of the equipment that was
Correct.
there, the usage would have differed by the usage, the consumption of electricity would have differed by some amount.
Correct.
Okay. And what I'm seeing is when I look at second row amount, the dollars kind of vary. And then the kilowatt hours, they kind of vary. And then when I'm looking at
yes.
the kilowatt hours pre and post, they look consistent. So I'm talking about row, second grouping, middle row, pre-rehab,
yes.
total kilowatt.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third grouping, second row, post-rehab, total kilowatt.
Correct.
Those numbers from left to right remain the same.
Correct.
Whereas actual kilowatt varies.
So,
from 42 to 80 to...
Yeah. So the kilowatt hours. So if you look on the top of the table, the first table, the top third row down, that stands for kilowatt hours. So what we did is we converted the total horsepower that was on site, the 600 horsepower. That's the total horsepower that was being used to produce water on the site. That's with the pumps and the booster station. The total horsepower was 600. Now we converted that to kilowatts. So that's consistent throughout. So that's the 447.42. Because that's just a conversion from horsepower to kilowatts. We use that to determine the pre-rehab hours. What we're trying to figure out is how many hours are we actually running this plant? And so we took the kilowatt hours and we divided it by the kilowatts that were being used to produce the number of hours. Then in the next table, so the third table, we have the post-rehab total horsepower. Based on the pumps that we have on site right now, we have 450 horsepower. So we reduced our horsepower by about 150. We did the conversion to kilowatts once again, and now we multiplied the kilowatts by the number of hours that were previously calculated in order to determine the post-rehab cost. Now, the cost per kilowatt hour does change per month, so we did multiply by each month's respective kilowatt hour in order to determine the cost savings, or we did in order to determine the post-rehab cost, and then we took the difference between the amount we initially paid compared to the amount we would have paid to determine the savings. And then we aggregated that by the end of the year.
All right.
Any other questions on this one? Okay. Moving on to the next thing on your guys' dais. Now this one I just provided to Director Murphy, but I do have copies for everyone. I just want to let you know that I provided you with the bid results that you had requested for the AMI project.
I got those 11 by 17
Perfect.
Sheets. One of
yes.
the bids looked like all zeros, Perfect. But there was an Excel spreadsheet that they had submitted.
So that one is for more of like a software. So that one, their bid was deemed non-responsive. But I can provide you with this, the Excel at our next.
Yeah, if you could print out that
yeah.
Excel spreadsheet. I wanted to
sure.
Make sure that sometimes bidders will not follow the forms correctly. I want to make sure that
sure.
it's not a problem with the form.
Yeah.
So if you can print out that spreadsheet, I'd be interested in looking at that.
Yeah, not a problem. Okay. Next item on your guys' dais is a flyer for a toilet and shower head giveaway. I am most excited about this. The other stuff was fun, but this is my favorite. So every year we work with Western Municipal Water District, and every year they give us money for our customers for rebates. And every year this rebate money goes unused. It's fairly an extensive amount. It's about $25,000 I think we typically get every year. This year it was going to be going unused by June 30th. If we didn't use it by June 30th, we would lose it. And our customers have not taken advantage of rebates. We have at our outreach events and try to engage them in doing rebates. But part of the problem is that they have to first spend money in order to get this rebate. And so we worked internally to determine, okay, what could actually help our customers? And we thought of coming up with a toilet and shower head giveaway where they just get to receive. They get to put their name on a list. They get a confirmation number. They get a time slot. They get to come here and pick up for free a low flow shower head and toilet, low flow toilet. Older toilets can use as much as 7 gallons per flush. These newer ones are 1.28 gallons per flush. They are chair height. They are ADA accessible. They are ADA compliant. And we were able to purchase roughly about 450 of them. Now, this was purchased through Western, so in partnership with Western. So Western is actually funding us for this. We're really excited. We've had really positive feedback from customers. So far, only one cycle has received the flyers. The other ones are going to go out tomorrow. So the other cycle will be receiving them. We did allocate some for each cycle. That way it was fair. Just because one set of customers are receiving the flyers first doesn't mean we're going to run out. We've allocated some for both cycles. But our customers so far have had overwhelmingly positive responses. I'm going to share a couple of them with you. So one person was, her name is Carla. She was thrilled to receive a replacement toilet and is excited about the water savings she'll see moving forward. And the other one is Leslie, who shared that an abundance of blessings for the district and mentioned she has never experienced a program like this before. So far we've had, it just went out on the 10th is when, if you had online billing, you were able to see it on the 10th. But really, we didn't start getting calls until Monday of this week. And so far, we have reserved 50 toilets for customers and 3 people who just want shower heads only. So kudos to our customer service team because while they are working with these customers to provide them with this great resource, right, a new toilet and shower head, during those interactions, they're also updating customer account information. So some customers have not had emails on their account or active phone numbers. Others have even had people who have passed away on the account. And so because it requires that you have the person who's on the account show up to get it, people are actually updating their account information. This is going to help us on a number of fronts and really help our community on a number of fronts. For one, it is going to be a water savings for them. A lot of the leaks that we have are because people have leaking toilets. It's a significant amount of water that they're paying for, but is just going to waste. Also with this, it helps us on our sewer, on our collection side, because when they come in to get their toilet, we are notifying them of what they can and can't flush down toilets. Some people just don't know. So part of this is going to be like an educational item. So this is what I'm most excited about. But do you have any questions about it? Have you reserved yours? If you'd like to reserve yours, please see Martha at the end.
The Saturday or that, so you want to share that now?
Yeah, I'll share the dates. So we're going to be giving these away at two Saturday events. So one of them will be July 18th and the other will be August 15th. So feel free to mark your calendars if you want to come by, if you want to interact with our customers. We'll be here from, I think our time slots are from 9 to 4.
Yes.
Right, 9 to 4. Thank you. And so we'll be here during that time. Feel free to stop by and either get a toilet, but make sure you have a confirmation number. Don't just show up. We won't have any. So make sure you work with Martha on the confirmation number, but we'd love to have you guys present during this event.
Well, I just want to let you know that the social media is also working. My
Yes.
husband saw it today and
Yes.
spoke to Martha, and
Yay.
he's on the
You're
list.
on the list. Oh, that makes me happy. Wonderful, wonderful. So those are, I guess, are my biggest updates that I have.
The quantity of giveaway is
Yes.
450.
It's 446 toilets, and
Okay.
it is 533 shower heads. So what we did is we basically put together like a proposal of the program to Western, requesting even more money than what we had in the rebate portion, because we know that other water districts also are in this pool of rebate money that's not being used. So we asked, is there a way that either other water districts can donate to us or that, you guys would like to donate to us? And they gave us basically a number and they said, as long as you're under this number, we can make it happen for you. So we worked with a store, I'm like, I got a home improvement store to lower the costs for some of their toilets, and they were happy to help. What people will be picking up when they get the toilet is the toilet itself, but they'll also be provided even with like the grout to seal it. That way, we're not leaving our customers high and dry. It's supposed to be, Melissa and I looked into like a quick connect, so it's supposed to be able to be changed in 10 minutes, is what the box says. It comes with the wax ring. It comes with the little side thing, the little nuts and everything. The only thing it doesn't come with are the water lines, the water line to your toilet. So that's the only piece that we're not including. Yeah. And everyone who gets a toilet, everyone who gets a toilet, excuse me, will also get a shower head. So
Whether they are or not.
they can decline it while they're here, and we'll put it in the back and give it to someone else.
Can we figure out storage where they're going to be stored?
So we actually worked with the store to bring it day of at 6:30 a.m. So we coordinated with them. They also have a forklift that we'll be using to unload, or they'll be unloading. And we're still working out how all the customers will come in and park and that portion. But we have a really good idea of what that's going to look like.
Well,
So,
you have two driveways.
exactly.
You have two gates.
Correct.
You can do drive through.
So you have a good idea too on how what it'll look like.
I have a very good idea. Terms I would use are not appropriate for a meeting of this nature.
Okay, we can talk after.
So good luck with that.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. So.
Okay, any further reports?
No.
Moving on to a D committee reports, and it looks like we have none.
No.
And 8E, Board of Unified School District Student Liaison, which I don't expect we'll hear from
Maybe.
until September.
Yeah, September, August. I'll confirm with Judy. I'll reach out to Bob Green because I don't know who is replacing me yet, but maybe he can tell me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll put you in touch.
And then you're going to be as the principal now.
I always picking a different position. So. Okay, item 9, action and discussion items.
Okay. All right, well, so if you can pull up those slides. They're quicker. All right, so this is a public protest hearing for consideration of tonight's resolution 2026-932, a resolution of the board adjusting the solid waste collection fees. All right, so procedurally for DM 2026-51, I'll kind of just go over high level. So first, we'll start off with the staff report. So I'll go through the background on the rates, the budget considerations, the Prop 218 process and compliance, City of Poopa Valley consideration, and then ultimately my recommendation. And then at which point President Leija will conduct the public protest hearing. I don't know. We don't have anybody trying to get into the meeting. Okay. And everybody in the, I guess, sitting here is for other agenda matters. And then, oh, except for Michael, who's the consultant, then board deliberation and then the consideration and the vote. So that's procedurally how we'll tackle this tonight. So a little bit of background, since 2008, well, not since 2008, but our current contract dates back to 2008, and that's with Vertec Waste Industries. So that grants Vertec the exclusive rights to collect and dispose of refuse, recyclables, and mixed organics in our service area. That original contract has since been amended three different times. The first amendment was May of 2024. That adjusted the CPI reference index, the monthly billing cost, and then other minor language inconsistencies. Same time, we did amendment number two, which added SB 1383 compliance language. And then most recently, we did amendment number three last year. And amendment number three is important for purposes of establishing rates. And to highlight what amendment number three did for our contract was it, number one, it extended the term with Vertec to December 31st, 2035, but also included two important kind of price points. Number one, the max year-over-year increase on the service cost was capped at 4%, which is, the service cost traditionally is based upon the CPI. that is capped at 4%. During the post-COVID years when inflation was running high, that was getting 6-7% a year. So that's capped at 4% per year. And then number two, no more than a 2% difference in the cost of the 90-gallon residential barrel compared to the city of River Valley, which is an important win, I think, for this district, considering how, you know, there's two different, well, the same service provider, but under two separate contracts in the same city. And I'll get more into that shortly. In addition to those, the street sweeping, which is no charge to the district, that's twice a month in the entire service area. And then there's quote unquote what we call free services. So, you know, we expanded the bulky item pickup program. We now have a used battery recycling or collection, you know, holiday tree collection program, community cleanups, used oil collection, to name a few. So then getting into the current 26, 27 proposed rates. So this process started back in March. March is the typical time frame when BURTEC reaches out to us, gives us their proposal for the new rates. So we received that from Michael and his team in March. And in March and then in April, we set forth two solid waste committee meetings, worked through that. At the end of the second solid waste committee meeting, the committee unanimously recommended full board consideration. So then that takes us to April 16th of this year. The board action at the end of that staff report was they reviewed the proposed fiscal year 26-27 rates. They authorized staff to initiate the Prop 218 process. They established tonight, June 18th, as the date for the public protest hearing, and they direct the staff to return with the resolution for consideration of adjusting the rates. So, a summary of the proposed rate adjustments. So, typically speaking, when we go through this process at the board level, we utilize the residential rate kind of as the benchmark. 90% of our customers are residential customers. So, historically, that has been what's influenced the board when it comes to analyzing the solid waste rate. So, that's what we've done in our DM. Looking at the 90-gallon residential barrel, the current rate is $38.92 per month. The proposed rate is $40.65. It's a $1.73 increase per month. That equates to about $20 per year. It's a 4.45% increase. And I will note the proposed adjustment is expected to remain lower than the comparable rate in the city of River Valley, which complies with Amendment 3, as I mentioned earlier in my slides. So a little bit of the cost component breakdown for the residential rate. It's made up of a multitude of different components. The first off being the service component or the CPI component. That's the amount that's kept by BURTEC. That's the one that's referenced in our contract that has a cap of 4%. So in the current year, that's 3.28%. So that's compliant with the current contract. The next three components are kind of like the pass-through fees. So we have the landfill recycling and mixed organics. That makes up the bulk of the increase is the pass-through three, the pass-through fees. Fifth is the SB 1383 admin fee. It did increase but nominally. And then lastly, the RCSD admin fee. That remains the same at $2. So that's important because the admin fee and alternatively the franchise fee on the commercial side. That's what Rubidoux utilizes to cover the overhead to run the trash enterprise. And going through the budget process, and I have it on the slide here, is we are anticipated now to finally break even on the trash enterprise, which has not been something that we've done historically. Historically, we've been at a negative and we've had to subsidize the trash enterprise through discretionary property tax revenues. That does not appear to be the case this year, and hopefully it won't be the case moving forward. Talked about that. So the Prop 218 requirements. So pursuant to Prop 218, there's a few things that we have to do. Number one is hold a notice public hearing. The public hearing needs to be mailed to the property owners of record or tenants directly responsible for the rate at least 45 days prior to the public hearing. And the notice must contain the following information: the amount of the fee or charge proposed to be imposed, the basis upon which it was calculated, the reason for the fee or charge, and the date, time, and location of the public hearing. So Prop 218 requires a 50% plus one protest vote for the increase to be defeated. So in our case, we sent out 8,789 Prop 218 notices on April 29th, which abides by the minimum 45-day notice period. The Prop 218 requirement to defeat it would be 50% plus one, which is calculated at 4,396 votes. Today, and I got an update from Martha a few hours ago. Do you have a further update? Just okay. So we received three written protests. Two of them were in the original board packet. I got a third one late that I sent out earlier this week. So three written protests. So for purposes of Prop 218, the protests failed. And another component, so the notice of the public hearing was published not only on our windows, on our website, and in the Press Enterprise, which is not a requirement of Prop 218, but has been a district practice over the years. Okay, so I mentioned this, a component of our contract in Amendment 3 is some sort of consideration with the City of Hoopa Valley. There had come a point in time over the last few years prior to Amendment 3 where our rate was the delta between Rubidoux's customers' trash rate and Hoopa Valley customers' trash rate was like more than a few bucks, right? And it just, it didn't make sense for two, I guess, for residents that live in the same city. So to Vertex credit, they included this contract language. So now that it can't differ by more than 2%. So when considering that, you know, we have to kind of work together at Hoopa Valley when going through our rates. So we know that Hoopa Valley is considering their trash rates next Thursday on June 25th. So if Hoopa Valley goes forward with that increase, no further adjustment is needed, you know, at the Rubidoux level. Now, if it's not approved, then there is potential for a recalculation of the 90-gallon residential rate. But again, we don't anticipate that. If Hoopa Valley approves their rates and the board approves their rates tonight, our rate will be less by like 16 cents of the rest of Hoopa Valley. And no impact on the commercial and the industrial rates. So its recommendation is to conduct a public protest hearing and direct staff to tabulate all the valid protests received. If the majority protest fails, which it appears that it has, to adopt resolution 2026-932, a resolution of the board adjusting the residential commercial trash rates in our service area. Questions?
Our rates include street sweeping. Theirs do not, right?
Well, I don't know if I would say our rates include street sweeping. It's not a line item that our customers, quote unquote, pay for in our rate. I don't know how the city's rate structure breaks down. I do know that they get street sweeping. How that's folded into their rates, I don't know.
Could it be appropriate to open the public hearing this one?
Yeah, we can open the public hearing, get testimony from the public, close it, and then the board can deliberate.
So at this time, we open the public hearing. Anybody, members of the public, wish to speak on this matter? Seeing none, and the letters of protest have been included in our packets, so we don't need to discuss those at this in the public hearing portion, correct? Okay, so at this point, we will close the public hearing. And from here, then we go to tabulation. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's three. So the protest failed.
Okay.
For purposes of Prop 218.
Okay, and now on to our deliberation. Would any comments or questions?
I have comments. So the letters we received, there's three of them. They're from Leland, Boom,
mm-hmm.
Jose Gonzalez, and we received, those were both letters, and then we received one by email, and that's from Rocky, how do you pronounce that last name?
Trevino.
How do you spell it?
It's T-R-E-V-I-N-O.
Trevino.
Trevino. So those were the three protest documents. And I've taken the opportunity to read those. Thank you for translating the letter from Jose Gonzalez, the handwritten letter was difficult to read.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a reproduction or if that has been reduced.
Yeah, it's word for word.
All right. That's all I had to say.
And anybody else want to know the motion? Make a motion. Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor? Or at this point, any questions before we move on? Okay, all in favor, please say aye. Any opposed or abstention?
I am opposed.
Okay, motion passes 4-1. Okay. Then we move on to 9-2.
Perfect.
All right. Moving along.
We, oh, no, it's not me. Sorry, not me yet.
We may take a break. Okay. We will adjourn for 10 minutes, 5 minutes?
Yeah, 10 minutes.
Okay. We will adjourn for 10, 5
minutes. Hey.
So we're on item C.
Yeah. All right, I've prepared some more slides to get through this. All right, so this is Director's Memorandum 2026-52, consideration to approve a 5-year cooperative agreement for fire protection emergency services with the County of Riverside. So a little bit of background information, contract overview. So the contracting agency here is actually the County of Riverside. So I know there's been a misconception over the years because, you know, you see the Cal Fire patch on Chief Hoyt's left arm. But our contract is actually with Cal Fire, and it's different. Not Cal, just County of Riverside. And it's the County of Riverside's cooperative agreement with Cal Fire, in which staffs, you know, our Station 38 with Cal Fire personnel. So just to clarify that kind of that misconception. So the scope of services, fire protection, fire prevention, rescue, fire marshal, and emergency medical services. So the current term of our existing contract is set to expire in a couple of weeks, June 30th of 2026. So I provide this little note. So the district has been contracting with the County of Riverside for fire services since 1980s. So I thought that was interesting. So early on, you know, the RUGO has been around for 75 years. Back in the day, we used to have our own fire personnel. I mean, it would make sense. This is an old fire station. So we had our own fire personnel. And then for whatever reason, you know, there was a decision made in the 1980s to get rid of our own fire personnel and start contracting with Cal Fire. So we've been doing that for about 40 years. Okay, so earlier this year, I came to the board knowing that this contract is expiring. I kind of gave them a couple of different options. I wanted to gauge your guys' interest with negotiating this new contract. The direction I received on April 2nd was basically to keep the status quo of what we've done in the past, to have a staff lead the negotiation. So over the last 2.5 months or so, that's what I've been doing with Chief Boyd and his staff leading the negotiation, which brings us to tonight's consideration of the contract. So the nature of the agreement, you know, the language is fairly standardized for those that have been on this board for a number of these contracts. If you're familiar with reading past contracts and reading the current proposed contracts, very similar. The structure and the core provisions are consistent. Not only are multitude of contracts, but just the contracting in general with the other participating agencies. Generally, the changes are limited to the cost updates, the administrative clarifications, and any county or state-initiated operational adjustments. So my focus going into this negotiation is really to verify, you know, the service levels and the operational assumptions, to evaluate the cost projections, and I have a multitude of tables that I'll walk through later on in my slides. Look at the escalation factors that CAL FIRE or the County of Riverside was utilizing in the their exhibit A's, they call them, and then to confirm that provisions remain consistent with expectations. Okay, so overall, as I mentioned, the structure, the scope, and the intent of the agreement and the exhibits remain substantially unchanged from the 2021 agreement, so 5 years ago. There are a couple of key changes, I guess you can call them. There was updates to the cost recovery methodologies and replacement cost assumptions. We clarified reimbursement costs in the Fire Marshal Program Administration. It adds Public Records Act and electronic signature requirements. So those are new clauses that weren't in the 2021, but no change to the scope or the delivery of fire protection and emergency response services. So the summary of the current proposed agreement and exhibit. So again, a cooperative agreement with the County of Riverside. We're proposing a new five-year term that will take us to June 30th of 2031. I think that this is beneficial, provides continued stability and consistency in the service delivery. As I mentioned, we've been contracting with the County of Riverside for fire service for 40 years. Many of our customers that have lived here for 40 years, you know, understand that the service provider here is CAL FIRE. People like consistency. It improves long-term financial planning. So in 2021 was the first year that we transitioned from typically a three-year renewal to a five-year renewal. So we thought that that was beneficial to the staff. Having a five-year renewal, you can kind of project out further, looking at the cost for the district, and it reduces the administrative burden of having to do more frequent contract renewals. So Exhibit A included in the staff report is all the itemized costs, right? So you might be familiar with it. It has kind of the personnel costs, the fire engine costs, the fire marshal costs, county costs that are spread out, allocated, and then direct charges. And that's how they develop this Exhibit A. So that's a cost. The way that the county bills us is they bill us quarterly, right? So basically, if it's a $2 million contract, every quarter we get a bill for $500,000. It's not a flat number. It changes just for the sake of my example, just to give me an idea of how it works. So as the board knows, fire costs are paid through the collection of property tax revenues. That's how we fund our fire contract. That's how we fund the maintenance of Station 38. Exhibit C, which is in the contract, is the fire engine use agreement. So that's been adjusted to $55,000 per year, which is based on 1/20th of the replacement cost, $1.1 million. So the 1/20th is the same calculation used in the 2021 contract. The only difference is the replacement cost is adjusted to a new number of $1.1 million. And then Exhibit D is the Office of the Fire Marshal Renew. So that incorporates the scope of services for the Office of the Fire Marshal, which includes safety inspections, investigation of complaints, business inspections, and weed abatement services. All right, so let's start getting into the numbers. So I provided four tables because obviously there's a qualitative aspect of the fire service, but there's the financial aspect, right? We utilize property tax revenues received from the county to fund this. So one of the things that I like to look at when I'm going into this is, okay, well, what has been like the historical budget versus actual? What are they proposing for the next 5 years? And how are we going to pay for that? Looking at historical property tax receipts versus costs versus projected property tax receipts versus projected costs. So starting off with table one, I went back to the last two contract terms. As I mentioned, 2021 is the first time we switched to a five-year contract. So I have the 28 through 21 contract and the 21 through 26 contract. So the first column right there in the middle, those are the budget numbers. So this is what you will see in our budget. And we get these numbers from CAL FIRE through that Exhibit A. Now, one thing to comment on with the Exhibit A is an estimate that are conservative in nature in the sense that they include the fully burdened costs, right? So the actual costs when they do their quarterly billing, have traditionally come in less than the budgeted number. So what that means is if you look at the far left column or the middle column, you have the budget number versus our actual cost. And historically, the last 8 years, I guess this year is not yet completed. So the last 7 years, historically, our actual costs have come in under the budget number. So what that does essentially for our budget is those monies roll back up into our unrestricted reserves. So we don't need to allocate those property tax receipts to those fire services. But in this current contract period, there was a number of different, I guess, pressures when it came to the overall rate, which is why you can see from year one of the contract to year five of the contract, it increased about $1.2 million. So, a lot of this contract period is through COVID. There's a lot of volatility in what's called the employee benefit rate. I think at some points in early COVID, it was reduced, then added back, and now it's increasing. So that's one of the things that's a state level decision that's passed, to Cal Fire and then ultimately through our contract. Remember earlier this year, we transitioned to the municipal staffing model from what was then called the traditional staffing model, right?
Sure.
And then the transition to 66-hour work week, which I think we did a couple of years ago. So those are kind of all things that helped contribute to the increase in the fire service costs during this particular contracting period. So looking ahead to what's been proposed by Cal Fire through their Exhibit A, again, these are kind of just estimates. These are the fully burdened rate. So what they've done is they obviously estimate the first year, and then for years two and three, they do basically a 5% inflator, which has been their consistent escalation point the last contract. So that's not really news to us. But what they didn't do is for year four and five, they didn't estimate those numbers. They have said that it's hard to project out that many years into the future. That will be something that as those years approach, I will most likely be provided a new Exhibit A, hopefully ahead of doing our budget so we can put that into our budget. So this is what they're proposing from a cost perspective over the term of the contract. And again, years four and five, that's just, that hasn't changed, but it will change in the coming years. All right, so we were just talking about costs. So historical budget costs versus actual costs. I mentioned that the way that we pay for this is through property tax receipts. So table three is now looking at property tax receipts that we get from the county versus the actual Cal Fire contract and seeing what that delta is, right? So going back to two contracts ago, 2018 to 2021, we took in from 3.1 to about $4 million in receipts, and our contract or actual cost is 1.9 to 2. So I put all this on there. So historically, over the years, we have collected more property tax receipts than the actual cost, which obviously would have to make sense for us to maintain this service. The last contract, we would get between $1 to $2 million in excess property tax revenues, and that would be unrestricted monies that we can use for other critical purpose for this district. I mentioned the last DM, historically, we used to have to subsidize the trash enterprise. That subsidy would come from the blue numbers, the excess property tax receipts. So in the current contract year, we've seen a significant uptick in our property tax receipts, but we've seen an increase in our Cal Fire costs as well. But it's worth noting is that our increase in the property tax receipts has actually exceeded the increase in the Cal Fire costs. So you can see 21-22, the delta is 1.7, and then the last completed fiscal year, 24-25, it was about 3.5, right? So that's huge for the district. The excess revenue can, as I mentioned previously, help with our enterprise funds or future expansion of fire services. So that's great when the property tax receipts are outpacing the Cal Fire costs. So I have found it interesting that if you go back 7 years ago, fiscal year 18-19, our receipts were $3.1 million. And year to date, I mean, I know that the fiscal year is almost over, but year to date, 7.4. So that's more than 100% increase in a 7-year span, which is obviously significant for this district. And then table four is kind of the prospective look, considering Cal Fire's proposal under their Exhibit A's. So what I did was I took our year-to-date property tax receipts, 25, 26, and I inflated those conservatively 2% per year. But that's not what it's been. Obviously, over that chunk of time, as I mentioned, that was over 100%. But to be conservative, I inflated that 2% per year. And I compared those to the estimated cost provided by Cal Fire. So you see the blue numbers on the right. I guess a long way of saying is, from a financial perspective, we should generate enough property tax receipt to fund the financial component of this contract. So other considerations, I mentioned this previously, we have a longstanding and, in my opinion, successful partnership with Cal Fire and the County of Riverside. Station 38 personnel consistently provides high quality emergency response, fire prevention, community outreach, and event support. Cal Fire is, you know, they're familiar to the Rubidoux community. They've been a staple in the community for 40 years. Most of our customers kind of expect the service that they provide at this point. They continue to support the service quality expectations previously expressed by the board. General counsel, he's still on. He reviewed the agreement and identified no material concerns. So generally speaking, staff believes this agreement adequately projects the district's interests and remains consistent with prior cooperative agreements. So it is the recommendation by staff to approve this new five-year cooperative agreement that will take our contract or partnership with Cal Fire, sorry, I keep saying County of Riverside, from July 1, 26 to June 30, 2031, then authorize the board president and general manager to execute the necessary documents to effectuate that agreement. Questions?
I don't. On this slide 7, if we could go back to that. So in the actual column for fiscal year 23-24 and then 24-25, the actual cost went from 2.8 to 2.5. Then there's this estimated for the next five-year period in the attachments to the contract. There's these The document doesn't have page numbers on it, but after page 10 of 10, there's a, we'll call it page 11. It's Exhibit A, city budgeted Exhibit A estimate, and it has the five fiscal years, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 to 31. And it gives numbers for the, as you can see on the slide number 8, for the last three entries there under the Exhibit A estimate, it's constant. There's like no change. And the thing I noted on the Exhibit A calculations for the individual fiscal years, for 26, 27, the number of calls that they're listing there is 3,256. And then on the next one, it's the same number of calls. And it's the same number of calls. And so all 5 years, the number of calls they're projecting remains constant. What I've noted over the years is that the number of calls we get sort of goes up. I think it's has a lot to do with population and population density. If you have more people, if nobody was here, there'd be very few calls. If there are more people, you can expect more calls. And most of our calls are medical aid. Our current response time is around 4.5 minutes or so. What I'm interested to know is when in the future we expect that we would need to increase either
equipment at our current facility or at a facility. And I'm interested to know what it would cost us to add equipment, whether that's a two-person rig or another building with another deal. My expectation is default. Over the next decade, there will be another 35 to 4,000 homes constructed in this area, maybe 15 years. That will increase our number of customers here at the district by about 50%. I think it's going to increase the population by about the same. I think our need for services over the next 15 years is going to go up simply because there's more people here. And at some point, we're going to have to do something, whether that's add equipment or add a building or phase it in. And one of the things we can do with this tax money collected is not spend it now, but save it so that when it comes time to construct or purchase new equipment or fund new equipment, we have those funds available. And I don't know what it costs to add I don't know what a two-person rig costs. I don't know what it costs to have a couple more guys out there. And I don't know what a fire station costs. I'm going to guess it's expensive. So if we could get some kind of, I know that you guys have talked about a service study. We get some kind of ballpark estimate based on experience. When we might expect to, when the need for additional equipment will, we can expect that to occur, whether that's like 5 years or 10 years. And we find out like what a fire station costs to build. You guys must, there must be some in the area that have been built recently. Surely we can find out what that cost is. I'd be interested to know that.
Brian, have we already talked to the city about the study that they made with the fire stations and how many stations we would need within the next 20, 30 years?
We have not talked to the city. I do know that Cal Fire is working through their own master plan, right? Because our service study.
Yep.
So I don't know the status of that. I have had conversations with Cal Fire personnel, not city personnel.
Yeah, because in the future of building anything in the city, especially for services like that, when they already have funding put aside to also build a fire station, that's not going to only be our CSC's responsibility anymore. Now that we're a city, the city has also taken that responsibility of building fire stations, especially for any new development that comes in, like Real Vista or any of that. Those numbers are taken into account. And it was determined that it wouldn't be needed in that area. But there is funding being allocated for a new station, not in this area because it's not needed here within the next 20 years. But it is something that we should be partnering up or talking to the city, because there is a study that was done with through the city and Cal Fire of how many stations are needed within the entire city. So I think that's something that's important for us to have that conversation with them to know, because I know for a long time we have been fire stations here, but we're not, you know, we're a city now. So they are also taking on that responsibility. So make sure that everybody's on the same page on who would be responsible to build and who has funding to do that, or if it means a partnership. But again, those studies that they've already done, there's only for us to build again or wait for Cal Fire. So you already did it. You can always see what they have available, like that, have that information available to the board so they can understand what is needed. And then also with the last time that we spoke to the chief, you gave us a presentation and we upped some of the equipment, right? We had a little bit extra stuff. We changed the plan of how many people would be at this.
Changed the staffing model.
Model.
Yes.
Did we go over any of the equipment that is there?
We did not do any. The equipment right now at that fire station is sufficient right now.
It's sufficient.
Yes.
And you think it would be within the next 5 years as well?
Well, because you guys have entered into the contract, it's part of the replacement contract, which is part of this all contract. So if I need a new one of my the chainsaw breaks, we get a new chainsaw. It's part of the agreement.
Part of it, the
Yeah.
contract.
Yep.
Okay.
The only time we would get add an additional cost for equipment would be to Director Murphy's point, is when we're going to add like potentially a squad, which is something that I'm looking towards in the future here, is to add a paramedic squad. And I already know what all those costs are and everything that's associated with that, but then that would come of a squad purchase and the equipment that would go on that squad to support that operation.
Okay. All right. That's my only question, comments.
Okay.
As far as the agreement again, I trust you. I think it's something that we have to do. I think it's something we need to move forward on, especially with the agreement that we have, the partnership with Riverside County. We've seen what they can provide and how they provide the service. They know us. You guys are willing to put on some volunteer firefighter robes on all for approving this contract. So I make a motion unless anyone else.
I'm not done. I still have more questions.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor.
That's when we discussed this before, I had questions that I posed to the general manager at that time, and I'm following up on those questions that I had then because I'd like the answers. So if you could hold off until I've actually followed up on the questions I asked previously, and when I read these documents, the answers aren't in there. So I had inquired about the duties of the fire prevention. There's the person that does it in this document here, this Exhibit D. They talk about the fire life safety inspections. So you have a person who goes by and inspects businesses. You have a person that inspects plans. And then we also have the person that does the weed abatement. Are those different people?
Same person. Well, not the plan check, the weed abatement and the inspections is the same person. The plan checks would go through our county office.
Okay. And then on this thing, it says for, want to talk about the review of plans. And it talks in here about how the software is not included. That's a second page of Exhibit D. All IT and communication tools. No, that's not the one. It's the third item. The permitting inspection software will not be provided unless mutually agreed upon in writing. So there's people that want to build like a large building that has like fire sprinklers. They need to get sign off from the fire marshal. Does that get routed through the city or does that get routed through us?
It's routed through the city.
Through the city. Okay. So the review of plans for buildings, that's through the city.
Through the city and our county fire marshal's office.
Okay. Thank you for answering that question. That's all I know.
Okay. We have a motion by Director Altamirano. Do we have a second?
A second.
Rayless seconds. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed or abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Okay. Item 9C, public hearing, considering to adopt, and that would be CA. Resolution number 2026-9.
All right, Jacqueline, I'll give that staff report.
Yeah, thanks. So this is to adopt the 2025 Urban Water Management Plan and the 2025 Water Shortage Contingency Plan. So the Urban Water Management Plan has to be updated once every 5 years. We have on November 20th, 2025, the district issued a master consulting agreement. Or entered into a master consulting agreement at the authorization of the board to begin working with SA Associates and John Robinson Consultants. So Sean from SA Associates. So we have them here today to present on the Urban Water Management Plan. So here you go. Here's your clicker.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank
I'm going to
you.
mess it up, so thank you.
All No, that's great.
Good evening. My name is John Robinson. I'm a sub-consultant to SA and Associate. Been working with Sean and his team for four rounds of bourbon water management plants, so about 20 years, plus or minus. First time doing yours, which is great. So we appreciate the opportunity to actually do your plan. I think it's a lot better now, so it's all good. Staff was super to work with. So with that, I'm going to go. It's a short slide presentation, first couple to get you there. So it's actually two plans in one. So there's an urban water management plan 2025, projects out 25 years. So we're going to 2050, plus or minus. And there is a second part of this plan is called water storage contingency plan. So obviously we've gone through droughts before. We're probably going into another one, though El Nino, we'll see what happens. But this sets up the mechanisms for you on how to decrease usage within your service area, and there's a plan to go by. So there's steps and so forth, and there's drought risk assessments that are in this. That was in the last plan, and so we just updated everything. With new staff and so forth, I think it's now accurate with it. So, and then the next step that we do is, and Jacqueline alluded to this, so this is going to the Department of Water Resources. Everything we did was based upon your records. But we have what's called a guideline that we have to follow from the Department of Water Resources. They're the receiving agency. They're the ones doing the review. We have a public participation process. The draft plan has been out there 2 weeks for anybody interested to review the document itself. And then eventually after approval, we will then submit this document to DWR for their review. It does take them a while to do comments, about a year. Plus or minus, there's about 400 that's submitted to them. But then we do this every 5 years. Now, the nuance is that's not on the slides is why you do this. And so the general reason why you do this, not only as a planning tool, but for Department of Water Resources, you as Rubido cannot go get grants from the state of California unless you have an approved plan on file. So it's the deadlines are a little loosey-goosey, but you do this partly if you want to chase grants within the state of California. Here's some details about your plan. Current demand's close to your 2021. It's about 5,100 acre feet. Just for acre foot, 1 acre foot is 328,000 gallons plus or minus. Water demand in 2022 were a little bit higher due to sales to Karupa Community Services District. There really hasn't been much of a change. As you can see on the bar graph below, we have this peak in 2022, but it's been pretty consistent for the last 5 years. And we look at past in order to project the future. So unlike other clients we have, you're in a great spot. You've got plenty of water, and that's what the first paragraph is attempting to say is Western hasn't had to replenish your groundwater table. And so we're great, other agencies do. And then you do have the future capacity to purchase water from West Valley once a interconnection is in place. That interconnection is talked about in the plan as a potential project in the future. First bullet, this next bullet on as far as the gallons per purse per capacity actually went down. You were at 166 gallons, now we're at 116. And I think we've just cleaned up everything and that helped through the process. The CIP, we do have to project to DWR things that are coming into play in the future. You do have quite a few things planned. New wells, increasing pump capacity. There are other projects that are listed like reservoir replacements and so forth. And then you have this future plan that you're doing with AMI, which is great. I have seen that actually decrease water usage for other clients. So that's fantastic to implement and it's great for operations. All right, reliability. So key thing here is you're going to maximize your local supplies. It's all local supplies. You're not bringing in imported water. It's all your groundwater basin. You working obviously with Western Water. That's their acronym now. You've got sufficient capacity within your groundwater for the current and projected. Loss reduction via metering and main replacements. You've already got a CIP in place. The AMI project is part of that process to decrease loss. And then water conservation, I have never seen a district engineer be that happy about toilet giveaway. Fantastic. I think that's a super program. There, and you'll be surprised on how many people do show up. It is actually quite amazing. But you are working with Western as far as your conservation program and Metropolitan Water District. And so you've got the toilet and the low shower head. Hopefully they don't do what my dad did and drill holes in them.
See, oh my goodness.
Yes, we will go there. Okay, so this is the other part of the urban water management plan. Obviously, this is called the water shortage contingency plan. This is where you have the six levels, level one through level six. And it's education with the public. It's mitigating actions for emergency. So if something had happened with your groundwater basins, it's how you implement, it's having a plan. Compliance and enforcement is part of those six steps. You have to have the plan in order to talk to the public. Monitoring revenues and expenses throughout the process is needed. And then you do submit an annual water shortage assessment report every year. And we've already got one on the agenda. And then lastly, should be last, is that last? There we go. Conclusions. Okay. Plenty of water. This document projects out 25 years. No shortage that we can see. And right now, in the event there was shortage, that second part of the plan is in there to help you go through that process. And that is throughout the state of California. Everybody that has these plans have those two steps within the plan itself. And that's it for the presentation.
I have a question. What agencies are involved in the interconnection?
West Valley Water District.
That's it.
That's it, sir.
Why would we need to purchase water for them?
Do you need to answer that? I'll answer
You're
that.
You're jumping
sure.
off the chair, so I'm going to let you.
Thank Go you. On. Oh, wait, hit me. Okay, so this is part of the TDS management plan that we have with the city of Riverside, and it's to lower our TDS. And so we did receive a grant also for the construction of this. So we applied for it some time ago, and we received a grant for about $500,000. We currently have a task order with Krieger and Stewart to do the environmental. So that's the stage that we're on right now. We also notified West Valleys that they were in here as, you know, a potential future source for us, and they were fine. They were happy with it. There were no concerns.
Any other questions?
I had a couple of questions.
Yes.
I'm looking at, thank you for putting page numbers on this document. I'm looking at page.
Engineer 101, right?
Looking at page 2-2. There's a graph at the top. Is rainfall versus time. Mm-hmm. There's a series of abrupt blue lines, which seems to be the connection between the rainfall for a given year. And then there's this red line. Could you please explain what that red line is?
Well, it helps if I put a key map on it and I tell you what the blue line is and the red line is, but we didn't. So the concept is that's just, we're looking at averages going throughout that span of 1962 to 2026, plus or minus, picking up the peaks and the valleys going through consistency. So we know roughly from 1963, plus or minus 13 inches, and then we're at 2026, and the idea was now we're roughly at 10. It's just to show it's a decrease for that time frame.
So what you're saying is over the last 60 years, I think that is, the average annual rainfall in some area has dropped from 13 to 10. What's that? Where is the source of this data from? Is this like an average of rain gauges, or is this a specific rain gauge?
It is the rain gauge at the city of Riverside.
The airport rain gauge?
That's one of them, but there's another one at St.
So it's the City Hall's rain gauge for the city of Riverside. My next question is on page 2-9.
2-9.
So I want to make sure that I understood this correctly.
So they're talking about water losses.
Correct.
And then there, in the charts that I received, there was potable and landscape. So landscape would be like the water we pump out of the ground, don't treat, and send over to the golf course.
Right.
And the potable is the water we pump out of the ground and then distribute for our customers to use.
That is correct.
And it's talking about the different sources of this. Or it's the physical losses. And so there's losses from usage by the district, like when we're flushing fire hydrants. We did that recently to flush out manganese precipitate. Leaks, like the leak I saw at a valve in Mission last Friday, I think that was. Then there's ruptures, and we have those. And then there's this meter inaccuracies. So we use meters. And the thing I noted about losses over time is that there was never a negative value. It was always a positive value. And when you're talking about meter inaccuracies, are you talking about what we do is we measure the amount of water that's coming out of that's moving from the street to someone's home. That's where we meter it. We measure that. That's how we produce our bills. And then we can add that all up. So that's the total amount delivered. Then there's the total amount that comes out of the treatment plant that goes into the distribution system. Is that metered?
Yes.
So there's a difference between the total amount that got pumped into those distribution pipes,
correct,
and the total amount that was measured getting delivered to customers.
Water in, water out.
Correct. Okay. And then that's one of the sources of this loss.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you consider that to be a real loss or an apparent loss?
It depends on your point of view. It's water that if it gets out of the pipe, it gets into the ground, eventually it will perk back into your groundwater, you get to pump it again. That's one concept. Your fire flow example goes to the storm drain system, hopefully declawed before it did that, and that doesn't get to your storm drain, doesn't get back to your groundwater basin, goes into a concrete line storm drain system, and possibly leaves the territory. So it depends on where the leak is occurring. Generally, DWR just wants to know the math between water pumped and water supplied to the customer and what the difference was. That's all they're interested in.
So those are all examples of real losses.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a difference between the measurement at the meters we delivered to customers and from the total amount that we delivered into the system, the comparison of those two meter sums.
Right.
All meters have an inaccuracy.
They do.
So would you call that a real loss or an apparent loss?
DWR would call that a real loss, assuming that you as the public water system are calibrating the meters, both your own going out of the plant and to your customers. So they would consider that a real loss. Something could disappear between you putting water into the distribution system and then before it arrived to the customer, something got lost or wasn't metered.
Okay.
So they would call it a real loss because sometimes the fire flushing doesn't put meters on. They flush it. You got dead ends and so forth. You would flush and sometimes you don't put a meter on it. You just dechlor and let it go.
Yeah, there are certain uses that the district has for water that we don't meter it because we're the ones using it.
Right.
And metering it would cause it to be less effective. If you put a meter on the end of the hydrant when you're trying to blow out sediment, that's not a good idea.
Plus you mess up your meter.
Yeah. And then there's other uses also. All right. Then I have one sort of thing.
Okay.
I don't get electronic copies here. I get hard copies. Where was this binder reproduced at? It was in house?
We've did it in house, yeah.
All right, then I don't have a question for you on it.
It was Melissa actually, so you can leave. Okay.
Anything else I can answer for the board?
No, thank you for your presentation.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so then what we have now is so just as of, thank you very much. So as of preparation of the director's memorandum, no written or oral comments have been received. I can confirm we still have not received any comments about this.
So for technicality, we need to open and
yes.
close the public
Correct.
Hearing. So
yes.
we open at 6:03, and based on the lack of any comments, we close at 6:03. Okay, and so at this point, we are ready for deliberation or a motion.
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Hold on. I need to clarify something to John. John, we have two separate resolutions. Can those be done under one motion or two separate motions?
Two motions, please.
Okay. Two motions. So
one for each resolution. One right. for the urban water management plan and one for the water shortage contingency plan.
So we are on
number two.
Yeah. Okay. So we're on A and then we'll go to B for the separate resolution. So we need a second on the motion.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions?
Who's the first one? Who's the first one?
Me. Okay. That takes us to item 6B, a separate resolution, number 2026-935. And is there a staff report or?
No, because the water shortage contingency plan, which okay. is adopted under separate resolution, it's part of the urban water management plan. It's like section 5.
Yes.
Okay. So we need to open a public hearing, which we do at 6:04. And with nothing, we close at 6:04. And deliberation, does anybody have any questions or comments?
Yeah. I received a supplementary set of tables that are labeled the water shortage contingency plan. Is that attachment one?
That's for, that was in the consent. So that's attachment one to consent item.
Okay. All right.
Make a motion to approve.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed or abstentions?
I am opposed.
Okay, motion passes 4-1. Okay, on to
thank you guys.
Item D, consider approval of Water for Tomorrow's school art contest program. And
yeah, we do have a staff report. All right, so this is should be a fun one. Hopefully the board shares in that sentiment. We do have some slides. The theme of tonight is the slides. So, Director's Memorandum 2026-54, consider approval of Water for Tomorrow School Art Contest Program. All right, so a little bit of background. The genesis of this is really kind of started at the board level. So, you know, we've had transition at the board the last year or so. We've been a lot more community facing. We've taken directors to Western and JCSD. And one of the things that's caught their attention is this community engagement initiative in the form of like a school art contest. So, you know, I'm referencing Western and I'm referencing Harupa Community Services District. And then, you know, some of the directors have asked me, hey, would we ever consider something like this? And it's one of those things where, yeah, we would love to do something like that. But, you know, we're a 28, 29 person organization. We have a lot of important things that we're trying to tackle. Like, that's one more thing we'll try to fit in. To my staff's credit, so I take no credit for this. This is Melissa and Jacqueline. The last couple of months, they've been working on this program, right? They've utilized guidelines set forth by JCSD and Western to kind of create our own. And we're happy to bring this in front of the board today. So again, the genesis is really at the board level, but this really aligns with, you know, a lot of what we've talked about here at the staff level, this community engagement, something that I've really pushed forward the last couple of years. To my staff's credit, they've kind of met the match, and they continuously push this forward. Jacqueline previously talked about the toilet giveaway. We attend a lot more events than we ever used to in the past. Obviously, the big ones like the Veterans Day Parade, the Meet the Machines, we've done that the last few years. But more recently, we started getting into the schools. We go to the job fairs. We did the Louis Rubidoux Library a couple of weeks ago. So this is just one more kind of notch in our belt to continue this initiative of community engagement. So we created this contest. The program overview is very similar to what you might find in some of the other districts. This is a school-based art contest, and our focus is the schools within Rubidoux service area, which includes Ina Arbuckle, Peralta Elementary, West Riverside Elementary, Rustic Lane, a lot of elementary schools, and then we have Mission Middle and Rubidoux High School. So really our focus is to engage with these schools in our jurisdiction, because JCSD has a similar program for the schools in their jurisdiction. So we felt like our schools are maybe not getting the same attention that other schools in Hurricane Valley are getting. So I don't think we have it on the dais, but it is in the board packet. So this is the little flyer that we created, very colorful, very good work. So kind of the high level program timeline as we see it, it'll run not the entirety of a school year, right? We don't need it to run that long. So what our thoughts is going into school year 26-27, from January to April would be what we call the student submission period, right? So that's about a 3-4 month period where the students could take the directive of this program, do their little drawings, and then submit it to the district. And in May, we would review and do the voting judging period. So we might have to tweak this a little bit. I want to make sure, and I'll talk with the team, because I know Director Leija and I talked about this. I think we want to make sure that the school is not out, right? Because the school is out, it'd be tough to get in contact with the students. So this is like subject to change, but in theory, what we're trying to do is at the back half of the school year, open up the submission window, give us the time to look at that, rate the students, and then come back a few weeks later and pick the winner. And then obviously towards the end of the school year and we can align the dates, we would do that. So the guideline summary, so eligibility and participation, as I mentioned, this would be open only to students in our designated service area. The entries must be original work created by the student. Like, we don't want, printouts from Google or AI generated images. Like, we want this for the students to like use their brains, use their creativity, their artistic creativity, and do this. You may see, if you go to JCC and Western, you might see submissions, right? And some students do a remarkable job. And it's one of those things where we can talk internally how we display that, but we would do something similar here at RCSD. The submissions must be appropriate to the student's age, grade, and skill level. So, everything is just kind of standardized. Keep everybody on an equal playing field. So we would have kind of a panel, and that would be a kind of a conglomerate of water industry professionals like staff, and then we'll fold in educators and maybe community representatives as well. We'll have a scoring system, 100% rubric, that's broken up 5 different sections, weighted equally, 20 points per section. There is an award. There is an award, so there's a monetary aspect to this, but I think the monetary aspect is far outweighed by the qualitative aspect with regards to implementing this program. So how we see it, and very similar to what the other districts are doing, is we'd have kind of 3 different groups, as you will, K-5 traditional elementary school grades, 6-8 middle school, and then 9-12 high school. And then within each group, there would be a first, second, and third, $175, $50. So if you add all that up, it's $675. Really, from a cost standpoint, it's nominal. This would be something that would not be funded through rates. This would be something that would be funded through discretionary property tax revenues. I mean, we have discretionary property tax revenues to the tune of $1,000 to cover the cost of this program. So again, it's not really about the money. Obviously, the kids might be motivated to participate for the money. For us, it's more to continue on that path of community engagement. I've said this a million times. I want to be a partner in the community, not just a service provider in the community. And this aligns with that vision. I think that's about it. So it is our recommendation for the board to approve and establish this Water for Tomorrow school art contest program. Oh yeah, Water for Tomorrow, that's our theme, right? So that's the name of our program. And then yearly we'll have a sub theme, I guess you can call it. So I think for 26-27, I did not touch upon that. The theme is...
No, I think that Water for Tomorrow.
That's a title, but every year it changes with Metropolitan.
Exactly. So we're aligning with them. So yeah. Right now we don't have it yet, but it'll align.
Okay. Well, the theme will change annually. Sorry, I don't have the theme for this year.
But we can tell you, though, when we, in January, when we're about to send it out to all the schools, we can provide an update and say, hey, we're expecting the theme to be this, and this is what we should expect. So happy to do that.
We hope the board's excited about this. Again, as I mentioned, the genesis of this is really at the board level. This is us just kind of formulating the actual guidelines to the program and then bringing it before the board for you guys to get excited about it as well. So questions?
Comment, but just to let you guys know, and you guys probably know about this, Rustic Lane is shutting down for a while, and they're moving everybody over to the Pacific.
But they'll still be operating as Rustic Lane.
I don't know.
I do know that.
You do know
that? Yes. Okay. So they're going to have two schools on one campus operating independently.
It'll be a mess.
No, it's going to be fine. They got it under control. So, yeah. But thank you for your report and for the effort you put into this. I think it is a good opportunity for us to have positive outreach to the community.
Yep.
So we're going to make a motion?
You're being making a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions?
I'm going to abstain.
Okay, thank you.
And now on to item B.
All right, Brandon.
I mean, the new podium, sorry. And let's make this short so you can get out of here, huh?
Okay.
All right. So you've walked by well two in our parking lot hundreds of times, I hope. And you've never heard it running. And there's a reason for that. It's because the water quality over the years has it had degraded to a point where it was no longer feasible or usable. And so it was kind of just like a stranded asset. With the addition of the GAC vessels on site, back I think in 2019, we were able to use it more frequently, but with the blending that was approved by the state and that had happened with the previous people that were running the district, it kind of just went by the wayside, and the risk really wasn't worth the reward to blend down the constituent level with the effluent of the Thompson treatment plant. So fast forward, now we have a little bit more forward thinking here going on, and we took a second look at it. We recreated the blend sheets, and we took all the water quality over the past 10 years, and we added it all up and said, hey, what is the problem? What's our biggest problems here? And right now, coming out of that well, we have PFAS, 1-2-3 TCP, and chromium 6 are the things that we need to worry about, right? We do have nitrates, but when you take all that into consideration and we refill that vessel with new biotomaceous coal GAC, we will treat for all the PFAS, we will treat for the 1-2-3 TCP, and then with those levels and with the new blend charts that we have, we're able to say that with the effluent of well one, if Thompson plant is running well 1A, then the levels will be sufficient to where we will not have to worry about it. It'll be less than 70% of the MCL, no matter what. Especially with the, we won't run well 1A unless we're running it late. And both of those wells have to be running before we can turn on well 2. With that, the water quality is very safe, and it's very good water quality. So there, that'll be a run scenario. Also, we put safeguards in place to where if well 1A shuts off for any reason, well 2 will automatically shut off, and there's nothing that will stop that. So, sorry, but that's a little bit of background. So the purpose of this is to replace the granular activated carbon at the facility and treat for PFAS and 1,2,3 TCP. The goal is to get this up and running as quick as possible. This is we want to run this source. It will actually end up being the cheapest source of water that we have here at the district. And with the blending that we anticipate, it will be of great water quality. So the recruitment, the procurement process, we requested proposals from 6 different vendors. 5 of them responded. And we based the evaluation off of technical compliance, carbon quantity provided, projected schedule, and proposals, and their proposal responsiveness, and more than anything, the overall cost. So the proposal comparison, those are the vendors: Carbon Activated, Evoqua, Xylem, Norit Americas, Calgon Carbon, and Jacobi all sent us great proposals. And Carbon Activated won with a bid of $78,274 with a delivered weight of the carbon of 41,354 pounds and the availability to do it before the July 1st date like we asked. All this information came in by Tuesday at noon. So that's why we couldn't get in your board packet sooner, because we've been working on this behind the scenes for the last month or so. And this is as soon as we could get it here. So Carbon Activated Corporation, the recommended award would be because they're the lowest evaluated project cost, the highest quantity of activated carbon provided in 41,354 pounds. They can meet the district's delivery schedule of June 30th before July 1st. Their responsive proposal was great, and their requirements to treat for PFAS and 1,2,3 TCP. And they represent the best overall value for the district. So staff recommends that the board of directors take the following action. Authorize the general manager to execute an agreement with Carbon Activated Corporation in the amount of $78,274.26 for the GAC media replacement project at Well 2.
The only thing to add with that, so well 2, generally speaking, like 800 gallons per minute.
So it can do, we're going to find out.
Okay.
So right now we're currently replacing the meter. There's the service meter's getting replaced. We're putting in a check valve. We're redoing the chlorine system. There's a lot behind the scenes that's going into this to make sure that it's safe and that we're doing things, we're doing things right.
I brought up that comment. So just to put it in perspective, about 700 gallons per minute produces 1 million gallons per day. So that's why I brought that. So
when's the last time that one had the motor pulled up and looked at?
That's a great question. But yeah, it
does
produce,
blow its guts out then too.
It does produce water. And the fact of the matter is we do need the redundancy in the system. All those numbers you saw in the
Urban Water Management Plan,
thank you, are based upon the assumption that we have the ability to produce this water. So that's where that comes from.
Do we have plans to rehab well 2 in this year's budget or maybe next year's budget?
We have money in this year's budget to do it if we need to.
So updating, it would basically turn on a well that we have been sitting on and see how it's going to, if they can produce it, this is basically what we're doing, right?
There should not be a reason why it won't produce it.
It's been producing hideous water for.
Yeah, so the GAC was removed from these vessels a few years back, and it was never replaced. So they sat there empty here today. just because of all the reasons that we talked about. And now we're looking to fill them, get it up and running again. And now we have a great provable system on how to create the best water quality that we can with the well that's already here.
I have one question.
Okay.
So one way to look at this expense is price per pound. So this is like around 80 and the weight's around 40. So it's a little bit less than $2 a pound, like $1.90 a pound. When was the last time we bought the activated carbon?
2 months ago.
You know how much we paid for that? On a per pound basis?
Not off the top of my head. But it's in the it's well 4 and well 6.
Yeah.
That was the bids that we got for that.
Yeah, it was $1.48. I know because I looked at the bills today. So all right. That's all I had on that.
Hey, would anybody like to make a motion?
A motion.
Okay. A second.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
No.
I didn't ask. Yeah. Any opposed?
Yeah, me.
Okay. Motion passes 4-1. Okay, on to item 5, director's comments and requests. Anybody want to make a comment or have a request for the meeting? Okay, hearing none, we will adjourn this meeting through Thursday, July 2nd at 4 p.m. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks, bye.
Right
now. Okay, I'm not going to repeat that shit. I'm going to be over 10 years.